Thank you very much for inviting me, Maria, though a week ago I wasn't saying that, believe me.
I came to Canada about 5 years ago to Toronto, and I went to some of these dinners, some of these events, so it's really very nice to come back and actually be speaking here, so thank you. It's a very well-run forum, and it's a pleasure to be here. So I'm going to be talking about Asia through my lens, and give some examples of how Swiss Re is kind of riding the wave, shall we say, of the, you know, the growth in Asia that we're experiencing and some of the companies in this room are experiencing. So I thought to start off, I'd better explain my role and how I fit in and why I've got a particular interest in Asia. So I run our client markets team in Canada for the life and health, which means it's my responsibility and my team's responsibility to kind of grow our relationships and write lots of profitable business with our wonderful clients. So that's the kind of prime role in Canada and the English Caribbean. But I also have a role as global key account manager for Sun Life, Manulife and Great West Life. So this is something we started doing about 10 years ago as a company. We said that these global organizations, we're best to face them by having someone responsible overall for their business based at their headquarters. And so that's my role as a global key account manager. And then I work with key account manager client markets personnel around the globe. So this is an example of the structure we have with Manulife. So everywhere they have an office, we would typically have someone responsible for the relationship there. And it's my job to coordinate that activity and put our best foot forward. So that's kind of one of the main reasons that I have a very keen focus on Asia. So Maria said this picture looked a bit like her. I don't know, because you can't see my hands pushing her off the cliff. So I'm going to talk about the opportunity. Hi, Gaurav. Some of you will be familiar with the protection gap. This is a terminology that Swiss Re introduced quite a few years ago, started off in the UK, and it was a way of expressing the difference between the amount of life insurance cover that people have and what they should have. And we've expanded that to different territories. So for the Americas, we're saying there's $21 trillion of cover. So this is kind of under insurance, where we think there is opportunity and need for people to have more cover. So the $21 million for the Americas, just to kind of put it in context here, $1 trillion of that is in Canada. But once again, when we're looking for growth, and when my client companies are looking for growth, you can see why perhaps they look across to Asia too. This is the kind of increase in premiums that's been happening in those territories. Well, sorry, this is the global increase in premiums for life insurance globally, split between life and non-life. And the figure for 2016, it's $2.6 billion for life and $2.15 billion for non-life. So real growth is happening in all most years. Clearly 2008 wasn't a good year all round, so for obvious reasons. But then when we actually break that growth down and start looking at where it's actually occurring, we see that, you know, the green is, sorry for the people at the back who might be squinting, the green is the kind of areas where there's real growth happening. And once again, we look to Asia and we see there's a lot happening there. I've taken the liberty of cutting and pasting some snippets from some of my clients' Investor Day reports. So I'm being very careful what I say because I've literally just cut and pasted things from their Investor Day. But I would commend you, if you want to actually find out more about what's going on with these companies, is read the investor reports, read the investor presentations and the analysts' kind of interviews, the transcript. There's a lot of very rich information in there where these companies' senior personnel are interviewed and asked questions about their growth strategies, what's going well, what's not going well. So that's a very rich source of information for me. But really what I just wanted to illustrate here is 20% of Sun Life's business is coming from Asia. So 12% say on the actual insurance side, but then their funds under management, which is a very growing business for them, takes that up to 20%. So this is material for them. A lot of attention gets focused. Another slide that's come straight from their presentation showing some of the kind of the history. Sun Life, their strategy previously seemed to be joint ventures. But I've noticed, and I think it's coming through in these slides and through their story, that they're actually starting to take more of a controlling interest in these kind of partnerships that they've established, in Asia, taking kind of more control of their own destiny as the local rules allow them to do so. And once again, there's lots of rich information. I could throw loads of statistics at you as to why Asia is an opportunity when you look at the middle and the emerging middle class. The numbers are huge. And you can see why Canadian companies might say growth opportunities are more restricted here. And so if you're telling the story to the investor about growth, you need to look elsewhere as well. One kind of interesting development from Sun Life, which they referenced in their Investor Day, was the partnership they've established with U-Mobile in Malaysia, which U-Mobile is a telecoms company and it has 5 million customers. And apparently you can now buy insurance through the mobile phone through that company. So that's a kind of a new distribution opportunity that they clearly are believing in and investing in. I turn to Manulife. I have to be fair, I have 3 slides on each. So this is actually from their 2015 Investor Day, but they actually repeated it in 2017. They included it again. And I think the point they were making is that the territories they're focusing on, they are more scale now. They've reached a more scale size in some of these territories than they had previously. So it's like the story remains the same, but we're achieving more. And there you look at their split of earnings, and it's pretty balanced. But once again, if you kind of dig into the information in their Investor Day and their recent reports, a lot of their new business value is coming from Asia at the moment. And they have an absolute, they've articulated a strategy for redeploying capital, underperforming capital in the Americas, and redeploying it to the kind of growth areas of the assets under management and Asia. This is great for me because this is, a reinsurer needs an insurer so that we can work with and kind of, work in parallel. So when I look at our business in Asia, it's a fantastic news story for me that my clients are growing there. It brings opportunities. So once again, this is their Manulife's way, being fair, of articulating the opportunity. So once again, 3 slides from each of them. If you're interested, go away and read. It's good information. I'm now turning to distribution, and once again, not sure how well you can see that from the back, but the different colours are the different types of distribution. So the blue is the Salesforce tied agents, the green is the IFA's brokers, the yellow is the banks, then we move on to the direct being the kind of tan, and red being other. And the point I'm making here is distribution kind of varies hugely across the globe in terms of what's the most popular. And in this table, we're kind of illustrating the current status of how distribution is split in these territories. But also, there's the comment boxes gives a bit of a trend as to what's happening. So we see, you know, across in Asia, we're seeing that, you know, China bank distribution is actually going up and Tide sales distribution is going down. Whereas in Japan, Tide's going down, but direct's going up. But in Japan, banks don't really feature. So one of the first things when I joined Swiss Re and started taking a real interest in Asia, our head of Asia kind of said, there's no such place as Asia. Don't think of it as one place. It is a lot of distinct markets. So don't ever assume it's all the same. And you know, this is just a kind of an illustration between China and Japan, how different they are. So talking about distribution, no talk would be complete without something on technology. And technology, from our perspective, is an enabler of differentiation. And you know, our clients see it the same way too. By accessing technologies, we can become more effective at reaching the end customers, and more effective at kind of closing the sale in a kind of a quick way, an easy way. So both those companies and indeed Swiss Re are investing heavily in kind of technologies to support our businesses. I mean, just one example, if there's PNC focused people in the room, my background is very much life and health, but I'll try and throw in a few PNC little stories. But we've actually recently formed a partnership with one insurance company and a technology company to provide flight delay cover. So if you are a frequent traveler and it's disrupting to you, you can take out flight delay insurance, and we'll know the second your flight's delayed by the amount of time that triggers the payment, and it will be automatically paid to you. So it's kind of a neat little thing, but it's just one example of how technology is being used to make a more effective journey for the client. On the PNC theme, I've got two examples here of new startups, or recent startups. So Lemonade, you've probably all heard of Lemonade, and effectively that uses artificial intelligence to make for effective quick claim payments. So they provide, their model is primarily at the moment in the US, and it's providing kind of rent and homeowners insurance. And yeah, they claim they paid out on a Canada Goose coat or something within about 20 seconds. You know, they have this algorithm which makes payments a lot quicker. Once again, it's all about improving that customer journey. The Zong'an Insurance is kind of a partnership. So this was set up between Ping An, Tencent and Alibaba. And so they have access to their databases, and they're selling all kinds of kind of property and casualty insurance. And once again, the growth they're getting is outstanding. And they says on their website, they're the first kind of digital only insurance company in China, with online applications, online claims, everything online. So they're trying to differentiate themselves in that way. And so we're seeing, you know, real growth coming through there. But I think my message from all this is really exciting, and we're all willingly playing a part in this to kind of improve the journey and the end game. But the other distributions are still very significant. So everyone can get very caught up in the sexiness of the new distributions, the new opportunities. But you know, if I flick it back to that previous slide, we'll see that direct is still accounting for a very small proportion of the business at the moment. When I look at opportunities, another area that's kind of really important to me is the regulatory regime. What's the capital regime in that particular territory, and is there an opportunity for efficiencies through use of reinsurance? So we look at, you know, clearly we're all experiencing a huge change here in Canada at the moment with LICAT, and we're kind of getting our heads around, you know, what that means, who are the winners and losers, which blocks of business are better or absorb less capital, use less capital under LICAT than MCCSR. Similarly, many of the territories in Asia are experiencing change. They're kind of moving towards the right from these old formulaic based approaches to a more of a risk-based framework. But one thing's for certain, it won't be the same as LICAT. So that brings opportunities where perhaps reinsurance can make efficiencies. So once again, when I look for opportunities, I look for the capital regimes as well. So this is the point where I say, who's from Munich Re, RGA, partner, because the door's there. No, only British sense of humour. But I did say, and Paul did market this talk, that I would reveal a few secrets. bit of sauce. So a few years back, it's fair to say kind of Swiss Re sat down and said, right, all of these trends, you know, I've shown you up-to-date graphs, but these many of these trends were visible a few years back. So how are we going to actually take advantage of this? Swiss Re was already in Asia. We've already got significant business there in the mature markets, you know, the Japans, the Australias, etc. But we could see this fundamental change coming through. So how do we take advantage? So, like all good companies, we did some strategy work. We identified which markets we thought had the best potential within a reasonable time frame. And then we built a strategy around how we were actually going to take advantage of that. And in particular, one area, which I'll come back to, we built up a solutions team who specifically went out there saying we weren't just going to do quota share reinsurance, we're actually going to take ideas and solutions to our clients and partner with them so that we can kind of grow together. So that was a conscious decision to do that. And that really came out of this, because you could sit there and look at all these opportunities and think, well, where can we play? We're a reinsurer. We typically sit at the kind of the end of the food chain. You know, we're one step, two step removed from the end customer. But really, if we're going to help our clients here, we need to understand this better. And the danger is, you can just kind of say, whoa, this is just too much. This is a... Sorry, once again, I'll have to explain the thing, but this is someone dragging a cart along with square wheels, and there's someone offering some round wheels to them. They said, no, sorry, we're too busy. And that, to me, smacks of so often what can happen. We're aware of these opportunities, but we're also busy getting on with our day job. So I think that, to me, was the kind of the difference that I saw within Swiss Re, that we actually invested in setting up a team specifically to take advantage of these opportunities away from the kind of the day jobs of the people who are already there. But the first thing we did was actually do customer research. Once again, we needed to be nearer to the end consumer and understand them better. So I've got a couple of slides where I'm just going to illustrate some of the findings from that. This first one is all about distribution again. And we're going from the silver generation, baby boomers, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z. And on the left, we've got the proportion of business sold through agents, then through banks, brokers, insurance store, insurer's website, employer. Now, what amazed me when I saw this was that the younger generation was so open to do business with banks. Everyone, you know, my naive, I'm somewhere near the top end of the thing, not quite silver yet, but my naive thought was that the younger generation would be all about doing everything direct and online. But it would appear still not quite yet. very happy to do their research online, but still actually want to buy from someone. Now, once again, I would say that trend is changing. Don't ignore it. It's going to be more and more. If we came back in a few years' time, it would be different. But perhaps that supports why, say, Manulife did a very significant investment in a bank distribution deal covering parts of Asia. And indeed, Sun Life has just done a deal with the same bank for India. You know, bank is still seen to be a kind of a very key way of distributing, a very effective way. Another slide I thought was quite interesting is kind of propensity to share information in order to get a better deal. So, once again, different territories, and unfortunately I don't even show the scale here. The green is the people who are not willing to share information, and the blues are the people willing to share some information in order to get a better deal. So in Germany, perhaps you don't want to start off with a direct thing, because Germany's at the top is probably the least likely to want to share data. I mean, clearly in Canada we have big privacy concerns as well. But it was interesting, South Korea, China came out of top of this as kind of willingness to share information to get a better deal. So now I'm going to do a bit of Swiss Re marketing, but there's a reason. This was part of our solutions research. So for those of you who've ever bought an insurance policy, a life insurance policy, you've probably had to fill in a very long application form. Is that right?
For sure.
How long?
20 pages.
So a typical application form could be 20 pages long. Not much fun. And not much fun from a business processing perspective in the good old days where everything came in paper. So Magnum is Swiss Re's automated underwriting engine. And it's been around for many years in many territories. And the idea is if you feed all of the answers to the questionnaire into that system, you'll get an answer immediately. That's your ideal. It can't do it for every case because some cases are more complex and you might have further requirements. You might require blood tests, etc., etc. But the idea of an automated underwriting engine is it makes you more efficient. It speeds up the journey. And now, of course, you can actually access it, you know, online rather than by paper. So most companies in Canada now have some form of electronic applications, and they have some form of automated underwriting engine, and they're trying to maximize the straight-through processing rate, the proportion of cases that get automatically accepted to reduce costs, whilst managing the risk. So Magnum was well established, but it was probably getting a bit tired and old, and we recognized that the huge potential for kind of digital online sales meant we needed to upgrade the platform, we needed to upgrade the technology that sat behind it. So once again, large investments gone into that in recent years, and we now see a huge number of cases coming through online. But when I say, you know, when I give examples of kind of how successful this has been for us, this slide is probably the one slide which kind of, you know, when I was passed the information from my colleagues in Asia, I was like, wow. With one client in one territory, one country, that client has 100,000 agents. Magnum is deployed on kind of iPads, whatever technology, so the agents can go out in the field and either online or offline, they can, in many cases, get an immediate decision. And we're seeing 800,000 applications per month coming through. So as a reinsurer, that's kind of, I mean, that's probably, I think, more applications for life insurance in the whole of Canada in a year. It's probably of that order of magnitude, I think. And that's coming through, so you can probably guess which territory or country this is. But, you know, that's just so powerful And because we're providing this engine to them and working with them on optimising it, clearly we're getting a share of that reinsurance. Another area where we're trying to differentiate, or I think believe we have differentiated ourselves with our clients, is behavioural economics. So, a bit of audience participation. Who's heard of behavioural economics? Not many of you. You should have, because it's traditional. I'll explain it a bit, very briefly. But once again, I'd encourage you to read up on it. It's a fascinating subject. Traditional economics says that we're always rational. We're not impacted by our environment. And we always have full information. Guess what? The real world isn't like that. But for those of you who recognise the picture, because I think there is a slight age, that's the original Spock in Star Trek. And he was rather logical. And this world doesn't exist. So behavioural economics kind of recognises it's a mixture of traditional economics and psychology, and it recognises that actually we're not always rational. We're influenced by other people, the way information's presented to us. And we don't have perfect information, so actually we're probably a bit more like that. So behavioural economics actually came out of some research the UK government commissioned, because it was really disappointed with the response rates it was getting to certain things. The proportion of people who sign up in the UK to be organ donors is really low. But if you look at that same statistic in other territories, it can be really high. Now, why would that be? And the simple answer is the way it was presented. One was an opt-in, one was an opt-out. And everyone's so damn lazy, they don't opt-out if you present it in that way. And the statistics on that, I haven't got the figures here, but they're hugely different. So the apathy factor should never be underestimated. Another one was pensions. There's some pension benefits that are available if you're a member of a small company in the UK. But once again, you need to sign up. People weren't signing up. So they commissioned this research, and this whole field came out of it. And the Swiss Re R&D team picked up on this and said, well, you know, if you can influence decisions like that, are there ways of working with our clients to get better, more accurate information so that we're making better decisions and we're getting better outcomes, better take-up rates? And that's manifested itself. We've done now, over the last 3 years, probably 200 tests with clients. So this is where a client has said, okay, we've got this problem statement, we've got this issue. Can we work with you to actually see if we can kind of rephrase this and get a better outcome? So here we're talking about underwriting. So we've talked about this horrible underwriting process that used to exist of filling in this long application form, being sent off, having to have blood tests, etc., etc. And we're saying, are there ways of getting better outcomes? And one of the first things we did was around honest, accurate disclosure of health questions. So at the bottom of your... So I'm referring to Ryan because I know he's kind of in the field of asking people to sign up and go through this process. At the bottom of the application form, typically, there'd be a statement that says, if you haven't filled in this form accurately, then your benefits can be impacted. Probably says it slightly differently, yeah, but that's the sentiment. Basically, right at the end of the form, if you haven't been honest and we find out later, you're not going to get all your benefits. So the simplest thing we did was say, well, why don't you put that at the start of the form? Because if you put it at the start of the form, the person's actually just read it, they're answering all the questions, knowing that they need to be honest, otherwise they're not going to get these benefits. Because when they get to the end, they sure as hell aren't going to go back and change all their answers. And by doing that, You know, something as simple as that. We got some very significant improvements. These are kind of ratios of improvement in the proportion of people actually declaring themselves to be smokers, drug users, and the amount of alcohol they use. So that was just, yeah, the simplest example. And I know there are companies in Canada that now have changed their forms. So some of them actually didn't do the test with us. They just said, that's so damned obvious, we're going to do it. So this was a way, once again, of us differentiating ourselves from our keen competition, and, you know, working with clients who give us significant business to help them improve their processes. And of course it works for us too, because we're on those same risks. We want the right proportion of people to be declaring themselves smokers or non-smokers. So it's a kind of a win-win. I talked earlier about the life insurance protection gap and the very material figures of under-protection. Another huge opportunity that's coming through is kind of in the health protection gap. You know, who of you thinks you're going to be covered in your old age for all your medical benefits, etc., etc.? Maybe. Probably not. If you actually kind of knew the details, you'll probably find you're not as well covered as you thought. And I think there's a growing awareness that governments can't fund everything. The demographics are against them. And so we're seeing kind of this growing recognition of people that they need to self-provide or to self-insure or to insure. And so that's another huge opportunity, which, if you like, our solutions team out in Asia is seeing as a major opportunity to work with clients. So one of the areas we're trying to differentiate ourselves is knowledge. We have a very significant research and development team. We have kind of world experts on many topics, and cancer research is one of those areas where the trends in Asia probably aren't good. Pollution, Western diets, all these bad things. You know, chances are cancer risk is increasing. And so we've written papers and we take these to clients on the various risks that are most prevalent in those territories, and then we work on solutions with those clients to actually provide covers. And one of the things about cancer is it's actually very difficult to underwrite for. Unlike heart attacks, that side of things, you can do the blood tests, you can see the cholesterol levels, there's some kind of good indicators. With cancer, other than family history, there's actually not many questions you could ask at the underwriting stage which have a protective value. So we kind of turned it on its head and said, well, you don't need a 20-page application form if you're just providing a cancer cover, because all of those, most of those questions have no value. So we've launched some very simple products in Asia now, senior cancer plans, where it's a very limited questions on the questionnaire. So the client knows very soon whether they're going to get the cover or not. And, you know, it pays out cancer benefits, which clearly is a condition people are concerned about. And we piloted it in one territory, it worked really well. So we've done that now in about four different territories. So that's an area of kind of real growth, and where, from a Swiss Re perspective, we're using our knowledge to work with clients, differentiate ourselves, get better outcomes. But the one thing I think is a huge difference from Asia than from Canada, I mean, most companies here probably reprice their products every 3 years, something like that, or look at product designs. The shelf life of products in many of the Asian territories is really short. It can be like a year. So everyone's kind of looking for that edge, that next advantage. So the reason I can talk about these products here is I know all my competitors are aware of them because they've been launched, they're in the market, and so they've seen them and they're probably already copying them. But the point is, in order for us to continue to differentiate ourselves, we continually need to be reinventing ourselves there, reinventing the proposition, looking for new opportunities which work for our clients and obviously the end consumers. So, the way Paul wrote the intro, I'm going to tell all the Swiss Re secrets. No, I'm not. The secret sauce. What is the secret sauce? A lot of it is just common sense. It's kind of know your customers. It's for us, the R&D is key. You know, we market ourselves on being a knowledge company and smarter together, where we work with our partners, our clients, to grow our businesses. Constantly enhance your existing tools. Magnum was an example of that. You know, if it wasn't iPad ready, wow, our sales in Asia would be so much lower. But we hit that crest of the wave just right. Develop the new solutions. You know, that senior cancer plan. Simple idea, very effective. And one of the hardest things I hear from my colleagues in Asia is the resources. You know, there are so many potential opportunities. How do you focus on the right ones? And perhaps that comes to the next thing, test and learn quickly. If something doesn't work, you know, don't flog a dead horse for 3 years. You just kind of move on. You can't afford not to. So that's the kind of end of my spoken comments. Being English, I had to put Winston up at the end. A pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity. An optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. So some of this stuff is difficult. You know, it is a huge opportunity. Where do you put the resources? How do you differentiate from, you know, strong competition? But if you get it right, the rewards are great. So thank you. Now, I know I'm hungry, but if anyone has any questions.
If anybody has questions, you can come to the microphone. If not, we'll get started with the video.
Vincent, you want me to do your microphone? As a reinsurer, from a reinsurer perspective, trying to grow in Asia, do you prefer working with the great insurers that are already there, the domestic insurers, or do you prefer to help these Western insurance companies, like some of them, gain further market share? And I guess some of the reasons to help matters.
I guess I'm probably biased, because my role is to kind of work with the ones from here. But I know our Asian team, you know, are supportive across the piece. The company where we did that initiative with the iPad was a local company. So they had distribution, but they didn't necessarily have, you know, the knowledge. So that was a good pairing. So, I mean, the answer is we'll work with anyone if it's the right opportunity. So I don't think there's a preference. There's competition for resources. You know, we do prioritise clients. We have to. But that's kind of on willingness to kind of, you know, work with us in a partnership relationship is probably the key that determines that.
Well, my question is maybe a little bit long-winded.
I'll have a drink then.
You can have a drink while thinking about it. I think the purpose of your presentation was to show how Swiss Re was growing rapidly in Asia. Obviously, you would have to invest a lot of money to grow in Asia. So I have several questions. One is, are you making any money in Asia?
Yes. I refer to our, I mean, once again, in the same way I referred people to Manulife's and Sun Life's investor reports and report and account. Look at ours. There's a lot of business coming out of Asia, and yes, there's a lot of profitable business.
Yeah, okay. You said yes, you're making money, but presumably you're not making any money initially, and then you expect to grow a lot faster and make a lot of money later on. My other question is, who are your competitors? Are they Canadian insurers or international insurers? And are they making any money?
I don't know if any of my competitors in the room want to stand up and answer that. I mean, yeah, the ones I come across, certainly when we're looking at capital deals, etc., RGA, Munich, yeah, the obvious players. So I'm sure, you know, they've been in the region many years too, so I'm sure they're working from a solid base. But clearly, when you move into new territories, new opportunities, it can take time. You're right. Some things we've done haven't made money, I'm sure. And that's partly around that kind of, you know, test and learn quickly and move on.
I have one final question. You might not be making money everywhere, but can you comment about which of the Asian countries are the best ones for reinsurers to get into? And
best ones to get into. I mean, for me, I'd kind of look at the demographics, and I'd look at, you know, the regulatory environment is clearly key. I mean, pretty well. It's the things I went through earlier. It's where the real opportunities are. I mean, China. You just look at the numbers. You know, so that was, okay, I'll admit it, it was China, where that iPad example, you know, if you get it right there, the numbers are just frighteningly good. But, you know, it's difficult in many other ways. And so one of the issues there that people had to overcome was, you know, all these rural territories where there might not be Wi-Fi, etc. So, you know, we needed Magnum to work kind of an offline version too, so that they could put the data in and then, you know, still get answers without it actually having to go up to the cloud or anywhere first. So, I mean, Indonesia clearly is a market with huge numbers, huge kind of underinsured population as well. But many of them don't live in the main cities. So, you know, some people are saying, is it the telecoms is the route? Clearly, Sun Life seems to be, you know, following that trend with its Malaysia activities. So, who knows which bets will come off?
Another question. Thank you, Devin. That was a really informative presentation. So I have a couple of questions. You mentioned Manulife. We have a new CEO at Manulife that's very focused on development in Asia. And I think most of our new business is coming from Asia, like you said. One of your slides said that direct selling is, you know, non-existing in China. The orange line was 0%. What do you expect? Because the general trend in North American market, I'm sure there's a lag behind in the Asian market. In the North American market, you're seeing a lot of direct selling. Do you expect similar kind of trend in Asia, and how would it affect Swiss Re's numbers? The second question was, again, related to Manulife. We have Vitality products coming along here. A lot of underwriting is going on a predictive basis. Do you expect something happening like this in Asia too, and how much, again, how would Swiss Re be affected by it?
The first question?
The first was the direct selling.
Yeah, so I mean, do I expect it to pick up? Yes, I mean, I used the P&C example. Where were we? There. So on the P&C side, we're seeing direct selling in China. And quite often, I think, I go back to my UK days, it was the direct selling on the P&C side that led the way and life followed. And I would say there's probably a similar trend on some of the predictive analytics I would say some of our PNC colleagues were, you know, further ahead, and we're now, you know, replicating or playing catch up on the life and health side. So yes, and I've had the fortune to meet your new CEO twice, once out in Asia a year ago and more recently a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, he's firmly going to make things happen. So I do believe there will be growth, and then it's for Swiss Re and our competitors to be part of that story by being a credible partner and bringing something to the table.
Hi, thank you, David. This is Lan Tong from Moody Analytics. I wonder if you could give us a summary of the differences and the challenges of the two main markets in Asia. I think it's China and Japan. There are key markets, but I think they are very different. So if you can give us some insight about the differences between those two markets. Thank you.
Sure. I mean, well, very different in terms of their state. You know, in Japan is a very mature market for insurance. So for their, the issue is what type of products can we create for the generation that's coming, you know, the huge generational impact of people coming through to retirement. So that was a very good question, because we do actually have an aging strategy, and we're looking very much into the products that might be appropriate for that generation. And, you know, if you look at kind of dementia, long-term care type products, they're not necessarily as easy. Perhaps it's more challenging, but once again, huge opportunity if someone can crack it, because demographically, you know, the need is there. China, I see, is a very different state, you know, where this is very much this emerging middle class. And once again, there's a great insurance opportunity for those.
So I couldn't let it go without asking a question. You're talking about many opportunities in Asia, or in different countries in Asia, for both direct insurers and reinsurers. I'm wondering, what about the downside? Some of the challenges, I mean, you mentioned there's the resource allocation difficulty, and also there might be some regulatory regime difficulties there, but I'm just wondering, what are the top aspects of challenges that come to your mind?
I think, yeah, the regulatory regime, though, I think that is opening up more. I mean, certainly there was kind of ownership restrictions, you know, which made it difficult to get started, but that's certainly improving. I mean, one of the challenges, and I know this is not, you know, necessarily a Swiss, well, it's an issue across the whole Asia, it seems to be the turnover of staff. I know, you know, through the clients I deal with, and even within our own teams out there, it does seem to be a kind of a trend to kind of move companies, which is challenging for those organisations, I guess, to kind of keep and retain the talent it wants. So I think that's kind of one of the challenges that faces the kind of insurance industry in Asia. Another one. I really am getting hungry.
My question is very simple. It's regarding the distribution channel again. So you have a bank as one of the distribution channels. So what does that mean? Is that a bank owning an insurance company, or like bank selling insurance like products?
It's the bank. Well, so I mean, you could probably speak for Manulife in terms of relationship with DBS. So DBS is kind of, you know, a major bank in the region. And so it has very good access to customers. So Manulife is kind of working with DBS to sell products to those customers. And we did another little initiative with Manulife where we came up with a product specifically for their DBS channel. So, you know, that involves some form of unemployment cover, I think, you know, bolted onto other risks. So the idea is people go, they deal with their bank a lot. The bank has a huge customer base. And if they engage well with that bank, then it's a great opportunity to sell other products.
Thank you.
That's the way I see it.
So what is the, why would banks want to engage these insurance companies in doing this business? Is it because they're charging the commission, or what would be like their rationale and motivation to do so?
Yes, they can earn extra margin. So, I mean, it's a lot of it's probably public domain, but you know, in order to secure a distribution relationship with a bank, you need to pay a fairly large sum of money. And so the insurance company does that because it recognises it's going to get lots of sales through that process. The bank gets that commission, some of it up front, for providing that access to the client base.
Sorry, last one, I guess. Just wondering, how advanced is the data analytics in Asia? For example, like if you're mining the data, like, you see the trend, for example, like, you know, how advanced is Swiss Re and sort of the industry in general in that regard? Is it in its infancy?
Once again, I'd say probably on the P&C side, more advanced. On the life and health side, growing. Data is a challenge over there. Even for the existing kind of large companies, is there data in a form that can easily be mined? And you know, for some of the smaller territories, we probably haven't got that data. So you're kind of having to make assumptions. So I'd say, I mean, the technologies we're applying in America, we're looking to see if we can replicate them there. So, you know, these things will come. But I would say the P&C world is kind of leading the way on the predictive side still.
Right, everyone, join me in thanking David and Brad.
Thank you.